Welcome to the Interviews Podcast. Welcome, Interisti, to episode 110 of the Interviews Podcast, the official podcast of SempreInter.com. We are here for the post-match reaction of Inter-Parma, which finishes 3-1 at the San Siro to the hosts. Goals from Federico Di Marco with a world-class strike in the 40th, Barella in the 53rd, Thuram in the 66th, and then the Darmian own goal in the 81st for the visitors. As always, I am one half of your co-hosting duo, Alessandro Raffa, joined here by early morning Gianni Paterno, 6 a.m. Recording where he's at right now. Obviously, we appreciate the hard work of the best co-host in the game. To recap, what was a very eventful, very entertaining, very important game, given some of the other fixtures around the league. This weekend, obviously, a little bit more rest coming into this one for the guys, given what went down in Fiorentina. Obviously, our hearts go out to Eduardo Bove and his family. He seems to be doing better. Unfortunate news that he is going to have to get a pacemaker or some sort of device for his heart, similar to Christian Eriksen, which would ultimately rule him out of playing in Serie A in the future, unless the rules change. Which is sad news for a young Italian player, but considering everything that happened, pretty positive, you know, just that he'll be able to continue his playing career. So, came into the game a little bit of an emotional toll after what went down earlier in the week, but it was a complete performance, and we'll get into all of it today. Johnny, where I want to start, because there was some criticism of Inter and Tejan Buchanan and, you know, a number of things, Lautaro, of course, after the game. And I just want to read off this stat because I want to start with the immense positivity around this team. Inter have lost just 5 of their last 68 games going back to the 2023 Champions League final. That is 48 wins, a 70% win rate, 38 clean sheets, a 55% clean sheet percentage. Other clubs in Europe, for comparison, Bayer Leverkusen has lost 3, Real Madrid has lost 7, Liverpool has lost 9, Man City has lost 11. So the duration of us being on interviews, it's been a really successful period of time for us. I just want to kick it over to you. Like, how are you feeling about this team that even when they're not at their roaring best is still able to dazzle and wow us and keep the good times going?
That statistic is actually incredible. And I'm going to ask everyone to bear with me because all I want to do is crawl back into bed. So I'm going to try to soldier through this. But to win 48 out of 68 games in all comps across Europe, playing against some of the most elite teams in the world. And listen, you can call me biased, but I think that we play in the toughest league in the world. From top to bottom, every team is going to give you a dogfight. It's not going to be easy to get 3 points. That's incredible. 5 losses only in 68. And yeah, you know, even some of the wins aren't pretty. And I'm sure if we go back and watch all 68, we could all find things that we can nitpick at or complain about or find to be disappointing. But at the end of the day, it's about results. And we were able to get those results. So let's be thankful. I mean, Bayer Leverkusen, even though I do have a little bit of a fondness for the Bundesliga, it's a, 2-3 horse race over there, and that's it. You know, like, so let's take that with a grain of salt. And I would make an argument that because we've been playing in Champions League throughout that time and Leverkusen hasn't, ours is a little bit more impressive. So that's incredible to hear.
You can make a very strong argument that Inter is the best team in the world. Obviously, we did see the Club World Cup draw come through. Inter is going to be in a group with River Plate, Monterrey, and Urawa Red Diamonds from Japan. So taking on Argentinian, Mexican,
Red and Dragons.
Japanese opposition. Oh, Red Dragon, sorry. And they also put out the venues this morning. I don't know if you saw it yet, but
I didn't actually. Because it's 6 a.m. here.
Yeah. So an easier trip for you, a more difficult trip for me, but I do definitely want to get it done. We are going to be going to LA and Seattle. Two games in Seattle.
Let's go. I'm sorry, everybody on the East Coast. I'll be at all three games. I will be at all three games. Let's do this. It's a short drive for me to LA. Quick flight to Seattle. We're going.
Yeah, the Rose Bowl Stadium, which is obviously an iconic American sports LA venue, and then Lumen Field in Seattle, which I don't know much about. I don't even know who plays there. Is that where the Seahawks play?
That's the Seahawks. Yeah, that's where the Seahawks play.
Yeah, so that's going to be,
isn't that turf?
I think it might be. June 17th, June 21st, June 25th. That's 2 days before my birthday. Very excited. And definitely we can start talking to the Interisti in North America that maybe want to make a trip out, and we can get together and watch the game together.
We gotta do this.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
We gotta get like a whole section of interviews, listeners.
Yeah, we had very pissed off Inter fan this morning saying that we're going. Luca Marchi interested in making the trip out. Would love to hear from the North American Interisti that are planning to make the trip, even the worldwide Interisti. If you guys are flying to the States for a little summer vacation, want to grab an Inter game, hopefully we can all get together. I also want to bring up that since the Derby loss, we've had 13 games. This specific window, we talked about this, 68-game window since the Champions League final, but specifically since that Derby loss, which was our first in a while, 13 games played, 11 victories, 2 draws that very easily, they should have been victories, 35 points out of a potential 39, 2.69 points a game, 102-point pace. We see Napoli is down to one competition a week. Milan was unable to give us a hand against Atalanta. So I wanted to ask you specifically about this 102-point pace and looking at the competitors here. Do you think that point tally will be enough? I don't know that this team can keep it up, just the volume of games and that we are placing an importance in Europe. But do you think we can keep that pace up?
I don't know if we can keep that pace up. But I do think that point tally would be enough. I don't foresee Atalanta staying this strong for the entire season. As much as I do appreciate them, and if you go back and listen to our preseason preview, a certain somebody on this show decided to pick them to finish second behind Inter. So I guess I'm not as dumb as everyone says. But when it comes to Napoli, I don't care. One competition a week, one competition a month, it doesn't matter. I think that they are the biggest frauds. Antonio Conte just literally plays for draws. He doesn't play to win games. He just plays to get a point, and not that's it. His whole thing is to not lose. He's not trying to win. And if I look back, really, and watch the Conte era and compare it to the Inzaghi era as a whole, I wish I could go back and talk to that version of Gianmarco and say, dude, do not fear and do not like freak out that Conte is leaving, because it's actually going to get better for you guys.
I know I was. And you're gonna, I know I was.
I was, yeah. It was
two of our best players leaving the club, arguably our two best players at the time leaving the club, plus the manager that had just won us a Scudetto after a long time. I know I was freaking out.
Yeah. I mean, and it's not that it wasn't rightfully so for anybody to be upset about that. But we play a more beautiful brand of football that still gets you results. It's not like we're playing this champagne football and then winning games, you know, 5-4. We still can hold clean sheets. Last night was only an own goal. I don't really fault Darmian for that. I mean, anyone could talk whatever they want about him, but like, that was a tough situation. And I think, you know, if he doesn't slide in there, who knows? That's probably put in the back of the net anyway, maybe. So, yeah, I mean, I would actually think that Inzaghi, head to head, historically has had a better record against Conte than, you know, most managers, at least in Serie A. If you look back at when Inzaghi was at Lazio and Conte was at Inter, I think he beat us at least 2 out of the 4 times we played them in Serie A, if I'm not mistaken. Definitely the first season when we didn't win the Serie A, they did beat us, and they beat us at the San Siro. And that was actually the COVID season. And at that time, Lazio was in first place before the season got postponed, you know, due to COVID. So it's I'm not too impressed with Conte, to say the least. I don't have the fondness for him that a certain guy from Sweden who lives in Gothenburg and may have a little website called that, well, let's say that it rhymes with Tempre Pinter. You know, I don't think it's his year. I don't think that it's his tournament to lose. I think that at the end of the day, Inter, Atalanta, and you could even make an argument for Lazio, have a better case to push for the Scudetto than Napoli does. So yeah, that's where I'm at with them. Say what you want.
I want to ask you about both of those managers before we get into all the game. First thing on Conte, what did you make of his reaction to Marotta saying that Napoli have to be considered as title favorites? I don't know if you saw the quotes, but he was pretty bothered that we're getting into the mind game, or at least it seems very clear that he doesn't want too much noise around Napoli being the favorite.
I did not. What was his reaction?
He was just saying that basically Beppe is playing mind games, and that Inter have to be considered the favorites, you know, based off of the win last year and how strong the team is. He didn't want to take on any of the responsibility of being called Scudetto favorites.
That just... Do you think that's like a loser mentality? When you only have to worry about one competition and you don't want to be pulled into those, like, you're bothered by what a director says. I don't know. To me, that just feels like that you're not even confident in yourself then. Mind games are not. If you can't even entertain that, I don't know. It drives me a little insane there. Like, again, that's
not
why
to
I
mention,
think that
has it not been season after season of every other manager in the title race saying the same thing about Inter? Like, Inter are the title, constantly putting the pressure in the media on Inter. Always.
Yeah, like, now if it gets done to them, it's like, oh, wait, no, stop this. Bro, like, if you can't handle the pressure now, having to only focus on one competition, bro, then how about you just resign and go coach in the Chinese Super League and not have to worry about a thing, and that's it. Because if you can't handle that little bit of a comment from your former director, yeah, that's guys, I'm sorry. I've turned into like a big hater of Antonio Conte. I think I can't stand him and everything he does and everything he says.
Yeah, I've soured on him a bit. I'm right there with you. But the other manager that's part of this discussion, obviously Simone Inzaghi, I was thinking about this yesterday. He has, you know, a Scudetto on his record, obviously the multiple Coppa Italia, and then the Champions League final. You know, we talked about our record this last 68 games and throughout his tenure, how good he's been, the brand of football that he's been playing. He doesn't have the accolades of, as far as Scudetti is concerned, as when it comes to like a Mancini, or obviously the treble when it comes to a Mourinho, or the greats like, you know, Helenio Herrera and so forth. But we are creeping up on just a sheer amount of games that Inzaghi has been coached. He's going to be one of the longest tenured coaches at Inter. As of today, where are you putting him as far as the managers, the greatest managers in Inter history? Because this team plays maybe the best football from any Inter side that I've ever seen. I think I can confidently say that we play better football than the treble side did. The treble side was impossible to break down, definitely more solid defensively, had a lot of great characters on the team, but their offensive potential or their technical ability, I don't know that it was quite this level of the current Inter side. Where are you putting Inzaghi for Inter managers? We can only, to rule out, to make this easier, we'll rule out before you were born. So we'll take out like the Herreras and the old guys.
Mm. I think if you look at it based on just solely, and I would have to obviously dive into the exact numbers of wins and losses, but if you take just trophies, I think right now I would still just put Inzaghi third in my lifetime. Mourinho being number one, Mancini being number two. Say what you want about the Inter under Mancini, but that was what, four Scudettos? I believe one, if not two, Coppa Italias. Sure, I mean, fell flat on our face in Champions League. And definitely not as impressive of a style of football compared to Inzaghi's teams, but the trophies were there. And by I mean Scudettos, like, or Scudetti, whatever. If we get one or two more under Inzaghi, he goes up. And the only thing that's holding Mourinho above them is the fact that he won the treble.
Yeah.
You know, that's the only thing that...
An unbeatable achievement, essentially. Like, you just have to repeat that in order to be considered.
Yeah, that's the only thing, that only way you can do that. That's the only way that you could, you know, obviously leapfrog him.
You and see these managers, some of these are rough. Like, obviously, I mean, yeah. So
all right, so let's see. In when I actually started watching Inter, it was Roy Hodgson.
Yep.
Lippi. Oh, and I hate the fact that Lippi didn't like Roberto Baggio. Hate you. You should be arrested. I don't even care that you won the 06 Cup. Tardelli. Cooper, guy I couldn't stand. Do you say you have fond memories?
It was when I really started getting into football, and I have this memory of Hector Cooper. It's like when I first started really falling in love with Inter.
Wild. Zaccheroni.
Zaccheroni. Yeah.
My dad loved him. No, thank you. Mancini, I liked, obviously. Mourinho. Then we had the nightmare of Benitez. Leonardo, I was actually a fan of. Couldn't play defense to save his life, but we were scoring a ton of goals. Gasperini was, unfair. I think that if you look at the history with Moratti, he would typically back his managers and invest in the players he wanted. Mm-hmm. Gasperini wanted to change the formation. They wouldn't let him. Gasperini wanted to bring Palacio, and I forgot who else. They wouldn't bring him. He wanted to sell Schneider, but keep Eto'o. They did the opposite. Now, as much as I love Schneider, he really doesn't fit a Gasperini system. I'm sorry.
I feel like with Gasp, it was exactly what you're saying, where he was trying to impose himself on it was his first big club job, and he was really trying to impose his vision and his system. And sometimes it's difficult when you obviously have like the stars of your team that don't necessarily fit into it. And I don't think Moratti was in for a complete rebuild to give him what he wanted. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that didn't last long.
Yeah, so that was unfair. Ranieri, I mean, I wish it would have gone better just because as a person, I love Ranieri, but yeah, it just wasn't the best, wasn't the worst either. Stramaccioni, we were all hyped for because of what he had done with the Primavera side. Mazzari, because of his success with Napoli, but that didn't translate to Inter, and that guy was just impossible to deal with.
Yeah.
Mancini's second tenure, there was hope. You know, like I think you were hoping, and you saw a little bit of signs that we might be able to get out of this banter era. De Boer was a disaster.
The worst manager in Inter history, without question.
Without question. Like, even though Gasperini's tenure was shorter, I still would say De Boer was the worst. Yeah, Stefano Vecchi was another Primavera guy, and it was caretaker.
That was
Pioli.
Fake, yeah.
Interista, too. I was excited for him.
He also had a 13-game win streak.
Yeah, and I wish it would have like ended better for him, and maybe, you know, it would have been nice for him to get his first Scudetto with Inter instead of Milan, but whatever. Vecchi again. Spalletti was hope. I think that was the first appointment that we were like, all right, this is finally going to get us out of the banter. And he did. He did do that.
He did.
And
yeah.
I think that if had he gotten the same level of investment that another manager who succeeded him got, it might have, you know, gotten better. He might have been able to get over the hump for his Scudetto as well. Then you got Conte with his nonsense. And yeah, I mean, in terms of style of play, Simone, favorite manager.
And look at the years, right? Like, these are short tenures. And then you see Simone has been here since 2021.
Yeah,
you know,
go back
in the
to
last month of
Mancini's
24. His first...
Mancini's first one? I think that's the only... In my life, that's been longer, maybe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 04 to 08. Yeah, so yeah, he's the only... 05, 06, 07, 07, 08. So 5 years.
Yeah.
5 years. And then this is what? This will be his fifth season, like completed.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
No.
No, this will be his fourth season complete.
Fourth season.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So he still has another season after this to finish to eclipse. I guess, yeah. He won't pass Mancini in terms of Scudetti, but he might be able to pass him in overall trophies, potentially.
Yeah. Yeah, and definitely a more pleasing style of football. Obviously, getting to a Champions League final. Also,
you know what we should
Inzaghi,
do? I mean, I know we haven't really gotten into the game exactly, but maybe not this episode, but I think at some point, we should compare the starting 11s for match day one of both Mancini and Inzaghi. And maybe you could even mix in Mourinho because of, you know, the fondness I have for all three. And let's see, like, who had more to work with, more at their disposal. Like, it can't be easy. But, like, yeah, let's see who they had on match day one, kind of compare their starting 11s and kind of see, you know, who maybe had a better lineup at their disposal to be successful in Serie A. See, but now I'm even thinking, like, oh, man, it's good. Huh? Yeah.
Okay.
Now I'm even thinking like it gets a little bit harder because if you look at the era that Mancini's Inter was playing in, the competition was more fierce.
It was more fierce. Like, and I think the players were better. Like if you look at the best players in the world right now, like they all, there's no standouts there. Not that there's no standouts, but there's no, I don't know, it feels different. I don't have the right words for it right now, but it feels different.
Yeah, so, I mean, listen, hats off to all of them. And I've got nothing bad to say about Mancini or Mourinho and not Inzaghi either. You know, I would only say things about Conte because of the way he left. You know, I think that's a quitter mentality. And, you know, if you're going to leave at a low, and not want to prove, you know, like, I think a lot of other managers would have stuck around to prove their quality and that they can win with whatever obstacle is in their way. And Conte runs from that. He did it with Juve.
Can you imagine if Conte has had to deal with what Inzaghi has had to deal with as far as, you know, the turmoil at the top with Zhang and being unable to spend a dollar, being, you know, under investigation here and there, like, and just he didn't say a word.
Having to ask for €5 at the door, you know.
Yeah, kept rolling through. Like, he's just, I think that's part of why Simone has endeared himself so much. It's just like, he's put the club first over his own. And you, there's no way you can tell me that Simone hasn't wanted a certain player and wasn't able to get him. Of course, like, of course he's wanted investments. But he didn't bitch about it. You know, he kept, he's kept things stable. And
he's had every right.
Yeah. And at this club, which is also constantly under attack by the media, you know, we're Gazzetta and Corriere and Tutto Sport's favorite punching bag. The fact that he's kept things tight, it's been amazing to see. And the last point on this before we get into the game, we've talked for like 25 minutes before actually talking about this game, but last point on Simone is that I also think, I don't know that the other managers were able to elevate their players to the point where they're being talked about as some of the best in their position in the world. Like Bastoni, Di Marco, Barella. Like, these are players who are considered, you know, the best in their positions or up there, top five, top three. And I don't know that that necessarily was the case with any of the other managers that that we can put here. Even with the treble winning side, I don't know that a lot of people considered Milito the best striker in the world. Or Schneider, the best 10. But that's how it shakes out. No, he was.
I don't care what people think. Schneider was the best 10 in the world.
He was. All right, getting into this game. So as far as a recap, I'll just go with vibes. First half, fairly dominant, and then unable to put away some chances. Obviously had a penalty rescinded, rightfully so. Put the ball in the back of the net with Lautaro, taken away for, was it for offside? I believe it was for offside.
Yeah, it was offside.
Yeah. So, and then of course that the goal Di Marco scores, which is picture perfect.
Right footed, by the way.
Right footed. Picture perfect pass by Barella. A great slide through for by Mkhitaryan.
Who gave the perfect pass?
Barella.
Interesting.
Into, yeah, yeah. Perfect slide across by Mkhitaryan, the little back heel touch to set himself up on his right foot, and the goal. Obviously, you've spoken at length about Di Marco in recent podcasts. You've spoken specifically about his touch, which was on full display there multiple times when he brought the ball from Barella down with a inch perfect touch. And then, of course, when he receives the ball in. Like, a lot of people don't have the composure to pull off the skill that he pulled off right in front of net. Not to mention, he's a wingback. Like, he's not a striker that finds himself 6 yards away from the goal and the composure to put it away with the weak foot. Given some of the news around another left wing in Serie A and some of the accusations, and obviously Di Marco and Theo have always been compared to each other. I obviously don't want to put it on, you know, the allegations, of course, but just on the level of play, he had, like, Di Marco has to be the best left wing back in Serie A. Like, clear at this point.
I mean, first off, last night I went out with the direttore sportivo of the Las Vegas Lights. So we were talking at dinner at length about players in Serie A. We were talking about, you know, so unfortunately he's a Juve fan. But I said, hey, if you had the money and you could buy anybody from Inter, who would it be? And he said, without a question, zero hesitation, Federico Di Marco. He said, him on the left side with Cambiasso on the right and being able to cross in and pass. And I was talking about his touch last episode that we were on. He brought up his touch. that he would be the perfect player for what's missing and what's needed, among other things, of course. He said, you know, like, as much as I like to hate on Juve, talking to him with his knowledge of the game and his ability to have an educated conversation and not just be complete idiots talking about it, you know, it was nice to hear from his perspective and what he appreciates about Di Marco. So that goes without saying how important he is. He is not just the best left wing back in Serie A, the best left wing back in Europe. Just the influence that he has, his left foot. I actually just watched the Beckham documentary series on Netflix. It was recommended. And not that I wouldn't watch it before. I just never sat down and actually took the time. Di Marco's left foot is as good, if not better, than Beckham's right foot. The way he's able to ping crosses, find players. Incredible, incredible. And I am so thankful that, one, he loves Inter maybe more than we do, and more than most of us as fans do, because he grew up in the Curva. He's been able to, like, do we not, this guy is living out all of our childhood dreams. He is literally doing what we wish we could be doing. Playing for your boyhood club, having fans chant your name, scream your name, scoring meaningful goals. I mean, that pass, Mickey, for everything I hate, was a beautiful pass back. The touch, control, and being able to just cut in on his right foot, his weaker foot, and be able to finish that, phenomenal. Phenomenal. Lukaku, same opportunity. That goes off his foot and gets started on the counterattack. Lautaro, unfortunately, for the way he's been playing this season, he probably is able to pull off the same level of skill, but I don't know if he's able to finish. Arnautovic, let's not even go there. Di Marco is, as much as I love Barella, and everybody knows that, this year, Di Marco is my favorite player to watch. And he is now in the Mount Rushmore of players that you cannot sell under any circumstance, in my opinion. I don't care what the offer is. Honestly, it would have to be something stupid. And I'm talking about like 150, 200 million euros for me to be like, yeah, let's think about it.
But with that said, I also don't think he would be as effective on another team. Like, partially, we do have to take into account that playing behind Bastoni, who is such a threat that you have to close him down, and allowing Di Marco to get the space, you know, that's part of the great players make each other great. And that's definitely been the case. I think the key thing that you said, go ahead.
No, I was going to say one more thing. I was another person at the dinner is our, I forget, like, he is not our, like, saying he's our club trainer isn't good enough. Like, it's a higher status than that. I forget the actual title, but he came from a small club called Hajduk Split, and he got to work with Croatia, a former Inter player, Ivan Perisic, and he's actually talked with Ivan Perisic about the player that he thinks is the best at Inter. And who do you think Ivan Perisic has said is actually the best player at Inter?
Federico
Di Marco. He said he can do things with the ball that nobody else can do, and that his control and touch is the best he's ever seen. Ever seen. Think about that. Think about who the clubs that he's played for and the players he's gone up against. And he thinks that Federico Di Marco's control and touch is the best he's ever seen. I'm also trying to get him to convince Perisic to sign with us. But anyway, it's to get that kind of praise from that from Ivan, who was one of my favorite players from the banter era coming out of it as well. That's awesome, man. That's awesome. And obviously he played the position himself, so he understands it. He knows what goes into it. And Fede just has taken it to another level. And I agree with you. Like, yeah, if he's not in this system, if he doesn't have Bastoni in the back there. And that was something that I complained about with Bastoni's weaknesses as a defender, because he did have Perisic you know, kind of insulating him and protecting him from being exposed because of the way he would track back and be able to defend and help, you know, relieve some of that pressure. Now that he's figured out the defensive side of things, he's elevated his game. And the two of them, I mean, they just play so well off one another that I can't say enough good things about the Bastoni, Barella, DiMarco, you know, trio, especially this season.
Yeah, and I think the thing that you said there that stands out the most to me with DiMarco is the level of influence from the left wing back spot is more than any other left winger in the world. In my opinion, you know, he's just so involved in all the good things that Inter does. But yeah, it's he's an extraordinary player. We're lucky to have him, and the fact that he's an Interista at heart since birth is something very, very, very special. Let's talk about the man who provided the assist, not only for DiMarco, but also for Barella's goal, Henrik Mkhitaryan, who I was tweeting, you know, Zielinski would expose this Parma high line.
Which he would have,
but, you know, maybe I was not giving Mkhitaryan the proper praise that he deserved for his performance yesterday. Obviously, you know, we had that slalom run into the box where he missed it. Like, he should have put that effort on goal. That should not have gone wide. But, you know, then he had the wherewithal to find DiMarco in the box. And then, of course, on the Barella goal, being able to just find, like, right to his chest, which was a very difficult pass. Can't sleep on Barella's, you know, how he made that goal, because he did chest it down perfectly into stride, took the perfect touch to get into the box and, like, you know, almost put enough weight on it where the defender had to close in fast, and then that little touch to cut across. But anyway, we'll talk about Barella in a second. For you, that performance from Mkhitaryan yesterday, are you still going to be clamoring for Zielinski to come into the starting lineup, or has Mickey shown, you know, he's not ready to give that up?
One game does not change my opinion of a person. I'm sorry. I'm going to need to see this at a consistent level for me to be like, okay, he can hang on to it. Zielinski has not disappointed in any game he's played, maybe defensively in the derby, but that's literally it. Everything else was class from him. Mickey did have a good game. What is that? Is that the game that's the sound giving that sound right now?
Oh, is there a sound? I thought, yeah. I muted the site.
No, it just sounded weird. It didn't even sound like the actual highlight. Yeah, look, great ball. But if Barella doesn't have that control, is it a great ball?
Yeah, it's put right on his chest, but look at that. Oh my god.
Like,
perfectly into stride. Like,
oh my god. Yep, sit down.
You can't, like, there are not many midfielders that can just, the turn of the chest, spectacular.
And did you ever think at all that Barella would pass to Dumfries in that situation?
No. He put the good of the team first.
Ever considered it. Didn't cross his mind for a split second. I think had he passed that ball to Dumfries, it's hitting a little kid three rows into the stands, right in the face.
Yeah.
Percussion to a child, and Dumfries has a lawsuit on his hand. So, if anything, he just protected him. But all kidding aside, that Mickey was good. Borderline great. But I'm not going to change my opinion again of him after just one really solid performance. So,
yeah. And also considering the fact that, like, we did get a glimpse at Hakan Zielinski and Barella, and we love the way that midfield looked.
We loved it.
Yeah. And also Parma is the kind of team that Mkhitaryan can look really, really good again. So this is not to take anything away from him. Man of the match, two assists, 90 minutes also. So this has been the case in the Champions League that Zielinski has been getting the start, but, you know, I think that is absolutely going to continue. All right, let's talk about Capitoro, Lautaro Martinez. Puts the ball in the back of the net in the first half, but does not count. Has two penalties on him, doesn't get either of them. Roofs a ball that he should have put away in the first half, really close range. It came on him pretty quick, but he should have put that away. In the second half, you know, he's released by, I believe, Correa and has a one-on-one with Suzuki and puts the ball wide. This is another player that got 90 minutes yesterday, so you don't expect him to get the start against Leverkusen. We are at, you know, a significantly lower pace as far as goals are concerned this year than last year. Yeah, 5 goals, 2 assists in 13 matches started in Serie A. Where are we at? Let me just get a pulse check as far as Lautaro is concerned, because again, it should be a lot of positive around this team. If anything, he's earned our grace a little bit, but seeing the frustrations on Twitter, you can't really say anything about it because the people that are frustrated are right. You had all the opportunities to break your duck and you couldn't do it. Where are you at with Capitoro?
Yeah, I'm still under the mindset where he needs to get in shape. He does not look like he's in shape. He doesn't look like he's sharp. And listen, as someone who's gained some poundage and seen his game dip, I know what,
like your idol losing. Wesley Schneider, like your idol Wesley Schneider.
Me and him, we have more in common than I like to admit. yeah, but it's. I think he looks fat. He looks slow, and he has to be able to get that reeled in some way to be able to have an impact in this club. And I think that's what's really holding him back. I'm not trying to fat shame or anything like that, but it's just facts. Like you don't. Look at him when he first arrived at Inter compared to now. The difference. It looks like 20 pounds, to be quite honest.
He's huskier. And
yeah. And it just looks like the decision making, the like reacting to things and being able to relay a message, like I said it before, from his head to his feet, it just doesn't look as sharp. It looks like there's just a longer delay in that. And look, I'm not saying I want to sell him, and I know in years past I probably would have, but at the same time, like, who are you going to get?
You can't sell him because now his value is plummeted. If you were going to sell him, it should have been last year.
Exactly. And then the only person that I would even want, we can't afford. Sesko. And he's probably going to go to the EPL. Who?
Šeško.
I was going to say Gyökeres, but yeah, I love Benjamin Šeško too, so. But yeah, both of them probably, yeah, we can't afford. So let's just be realistic, you know, like it's different than saying you want to sell, I don't know, Pavard, right? Let's say hypothetically. You could get really good defenders for under 20 million at this point and be able to, you're not going to find a good strike. Like let's say you sell Lautaro for 60 million. Let's just say we're screwed. We take 60 from whoever. We're not finding a striker even remotely close to that value or that quality for that value. So we have to be patient. It's not easy. We're fans, right? We want results. We want to see improvement. We want to see people being able to elevate their game and get back to even at least the status that he was at last season.
Benjamin Sesko just scored, by the way. Just throwing that out
Benny,
there.
Benny.
He heard us.
Marcus and Sesko wouldn't sound bad, though.
It would not. Where are you at? Do you think... So Inzaghi, after the game, said that he left, although Arnautovic and Taremi... And by the way, Arnautovic apparently had some sort of familial issue that caused him to miss some training this week.
Yeah,
so
I'm actually holding his kids... I'm holding his kids hostage.
That's what it was. Okay.
That's it.
Yeah, no one used like GeoGuessr or something to try to find Johnny. But mm-hmm. Yeah, he said that Taremi Arnautovic would have played today, but he wanted Lautaro to get a goal. Obviously, when you hear a manager say something like that, you know, they are putting a little bit of weight onto the mental component of it, where it's just like he wants him to get a goal just for the mental, right? Just put it in the back of the net just for his mental. How do you fix that? Is it simply just a matter of getting the ball in the back of the net, or do you think like something's going on with him where you know, maybe his finish in the Ballon d'Or disappointed him, not being selected to the FIFA Pro, you know, team of the year? Like, do you think that there's something else going on with him mentally, as a, you know, that's out of the ordinary, causing him to miss chances like this?
I mean, it's a great question, right? Like, you want to hope that those things aren't weighing on him and affecting him and taking him out of his game. Like, I don't think the Ballon d'Or should matter to you that much that it just makes you now a shell of the player you were last season. It's a popularity contest, and unfortunately, Lautaro, you're not popular. Like, that's really all it is. Like, it has nothing to do with actual play on the pitch. And don't get me wrong, I don't think Rodri's a bad midfielder. I don't think that he's undeserving of it at some point. But you can't tell me the impact that Rodri had was bigger than what Lautaro did. Like, you just can't. Now people, of course, are going to point to what's happening at Man City, the losses. Like, oh, Rodri's not, you know, there, and that's why they're losing. Oh, so one player, that's it. Like, they don't have Erling Haaland up top. They don't have millions and millions and millions of dollars all over the pitch. Like, I know De Bruyne is getting older. Doesn't mean he's useless now. Bernardo Silva is now, what, just complete trash? Like, that is that where we're at with this? Doku doesn't have, you know, blistering pace. That back line isn't world-class. That goalkeeper isn't a top 10 maybe in Europe. Ederson, I don't know where you would put him really, but I would say maybe top 10. You know, like, you can't tell me Rodri is that influential. That I'm sorry. But anyway, I think that, I'm sure there is something, maybe personal life, I don't know, that we can't, you know, point to or know for certainty, but something has to be weighing on him. And of course, it looks like it's taking a toll on him as on a physical side, where he just doesn't look like he's in the same fitness level where he can be effective. And that might be what's really playing into this. I know when you're in a bit of a slump, I can only talk from it from the baseball side of things, but like, when you're not getting hits, you're gripping your bat tighter, you're trying everything to, you know, to get even like a tweener or a duck to be able to break that. And that's probably what he's doing. You know, he's tensing up a little bit maybe before he takes a shot. He's overthinking.
That seems like what happened in the second half with that miss where he's one-on-one with Zion and he just like puts it to the side. Like, got to put that away. Like, that's a much simpler finish than what he was trying to make it.
No, I mean, yeah, 100%. Like, it's hard because I feel like it almost seems hypocritical when me, who isn't patient at times, trying to tell us as in defense to preach patience. But I think we just have to be a little patient here, because who's to say the next three games he doesn't score five goals, right? You know, like, that's just the kind of player Lautaro is, where all of a sudden, you know, he's putting them in left and right. So let's hope that he figures it out, stick with him. It is frustrating. Yeah, we want him to score. We want him to be an influential part of this club, but we just need to be a little patient here.
That's what I'm going to ask you next. Like, do you think this is going to end up being a down year for Lautaro, or do you think he'll turn things around here?
But what are we comparing it to? Like, last season? Or are we just saying
he's not
for
gonna
his
hit
standard?
The heights of last season. Let's say, so he's got five right now. There's like 40 games left in all competitions. Is he going to hit 20?
He's at what, five in all comps?
Five in all comps. Six? 40 games left.
Five in all comps. 40 games left, so that means he would need 15 goals in 40 games?
Up to 40 games left, sorry. That's accounting for deep Coppa Italia and deep Champions League runs.
Yeah, this is tough.
15 goals feels like a lot.
For the way he's playing, yeah, it does.
But he also got himself in opportunities today. Like, he had chances. He's getting opportunities.
Yeah. I'm going to say he... You know what? Let's go optimistic. I'll say he does it.
Okay.
Mostly because I hope I'm right. I don't know if it's realistic, but I'm hopeful.
I hope you are too. I hope you are too. I wonder how long the leash is going to get with him just not performing, because we are going to play some. The hope is that we are going to play some really important games this season, and at some point it's like you can't just keep throwing an underperforming player into really important situations. Now the question does become like, who is the next man up? Because Tuku comes on the pitch and is looking like a man on fire. Has that little dummy that gets into Lautaro and then plays a perfect ball through ball for Dumfries that gets played across, should have been finished in the end. He also laid the ball off for Lautaro when he had that bad miss. He looked very, very lively in his cameo. I'll just say that. I think yesterday I tweeted that I might be reformed as far as the Tuku conversation is concerned. Obviously, Inzaghi talking a lot about how he looks like he's the player that he once was. He's playing for a contract. Nima did, you know, mention that on Twitter yesterday. Oh man, wow, Man City just went 1-0 down to Crystal Palace. So yeah, hopefully Tuku can be that guy, because you know that Emi doesn't necessarily look up to it. Arnautovic, we know, is not going to be up to it, and we'll see how things shake out there. I want to show the Marcus Thuram goal. He's up to 10 goals now on the season. It does feel like he's going to end up being Inter's top scorer this year, you know, all things considered as far as health is concerned. Corner comes in, Bisek heads it to the back post. Thuram said he went over and hugged Simone because that this is something that they've worked on in the training ground specifically this week as far as attacking the back post. Thuram putting goals in, 2 goals behind Retegi right now for Capo Cannoniere. What would you say his chances are that he can overtake him and win the award? Would be the second Inter player in a row to do so if he's able to.
I would say his chances are low. I don't see him as being that consistent of a finisher to be able to leapfrog him, unfortunately. Not that I don't want him to. I just don't think that's really, you know, Marcus's game. Now, if he does, man, I'd be thrilled. That'd be amazing. But do I think it's going to happen? Probably not. And who knows? I mean, listen, I don't wish injury on Retegi, but, you know, maybe that could change things too. You know, if he, unfortunately, he goes down and is unable to finish, you know, a large chunk of the season. Yeah, I think he'll keep it close, though. Let's say that. You know, he might be able to keep himself within striking distance to be able to make this like a two-horse race, for sure.
Bigger potential. What would be the biggest loss for Inter this summer? Because I expect bids for both Thuram and Bisek to come in. Again, we're managed by an American investment fund who's going to look at the numbers concerned. Yeah. What would be the tougher loss to overcome?
Thuram.
You think so?
Like I said, you can't replace a striker and find another one of equal value or equal abilities. And like, like if I knew we were going, all right, Thuram sold and we're getting Sesko, like that's the plan, different story. Like, I feel differently. But wouldn't it probably would be we sell Thuram and replace him with like Dennis Mann? You know, like that's like, I'm not saying that's the player, like the value wise is what we would go for. You know what I'm saying? Like,
no, of course. Like, Jan, you're not going to find a striker of equivalent, you know, potential ability of Bisek for 7 million euros in 3 years, like over a 3-year deferral payment. Like, that was such a steal. You're more likely to find that operation for a defender that can make it, but it would be very hard to replace a Thuram without making a significant monetary outlay. Yeah, I think I agree with you. Although I really want both of these players to stay.
For sure.
Yeah, we're coming up on an hour here, so let's. I just want to touch on quickly the criticism for Tejan Buchanan. I think it's really everyone is able to say what they want to say. I thought it was really overblown. Like, they were killing him for losing the ball on Parma's goal, which obviously, like, you know, he did turn into pressure and lost the ball, and it is what it is. People were saying that he didn't look as comfortable on the left. I didn't think it was that, like, terrible of a performance. I'm going to take into account that he's coming off a major injury. This is his second appearance for Inter. Yeah, the Tejan hate is a little bit, and people like talking like he's already a bust. Like, it's just not.
It's so forced. It's so forced. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't. It almost feels like we Interisti need to find something to harp on, despite the fact, like, we talked about the statistics in the last 68 games. It's been such an incredible run. Like, what are we even talking about? We can't give this kid just like a little bit of time. Like, he had it's not like he's been with the team for this long. Like, he hasn't been with the team. He's been suffering. He's suffered injuries. So yeah, I agree with you. I think it's really forced. I'm not out on this kid whatsoever.
No. The same people who are criticizing Tejan are the same ones who defend Aslani when he makes mistakes, which is just hilarious to me. Like, just say you have a bias towards him. And people who probably will come back and say something towards me and my support of Tejan and whatever, and they were like, oh, look how you feel about Dumfries. Look how you feel about Aslani. Okay, look at the sample sizes you have of those players. Much larger sample size to compare it to. Now, This was probably the worst performance Buchanan's had in Inter colors. Let's say that.
It was.
Right? Now, how many has he had, though? Like, I mean, performances in general. Maybe 15 tops? I don't think he's done more than that for Inter.
You're looking it up right now.
Yep.
So Tejan has played. Let me see. He's never been in the starting 11. He's been.
Yep.
I think he has 6 games for Inter.
Six games.
Yeah.
And that's it. We're casting him away. I am so thankful that so many people are not able to have influence at this club. 6 games. If that's the case, then right, they probably would have given Ricky Alvarez the armband after 6 games. I don't get it. It's just so forced. I get if you don't like Canadian players. Listen, I feel that way about Jonathan David. And at this point, it probably is a little forced. Although I still think that the quality of talent he goes up against is a joke. So I'm still not sold. But anyway, if that's how you feel, it's just because he's Canadian, or, you know, he's a threat to your favorite player who happens to be a right wing back from Holland who, you know, probably should be sold. Fine. Whatever. I just at least come out and say it. But don't look at this one performance and be like, oh, that's it. Not Inter quality. Shouldn't be in the starting 11. Like, that's. All right, maybe not in the starting 11 right now. But that's just ridiculous that you're just done with one guy after one poor game.
Yeah, completely agreed. All right, let's get closer to wrapping this up. Just taking an eye on the time here. I do have to head out to work. So, Darmian, you know, scores an own goal. Tejan gave the ball away. Potomar, a good team on the counterattack. The ball gets slipped through to man, and Darmian goes to put the ball out wide, ends up going into the back of the net. We don't get the clean sheet. It is what it is. With a game in hand, Inter sits on 31 points in third place, 3 points off of the top. Atalanta is sitting there with 34 points. You have a plus 19 goal differential, which is second best in the league behind Atalanta, who's on plus 21. Upcoming fixtures, Leverkusen on Tuesday, and then Lazio the following Monday, and then Udinese in the Coppa Italia. So if you were to game this out a little bit, you would say rotation against Leverkusen, starting 11 against Lazio, rotation against Udinese. Udinese may be an opportunity for Jose Martinez to make his first start. How would you approach the Leverkusen game? Because it feels like mathematically it's not the most important game on the schedule. You are doing super well in the Champions League. It is an opportunity to come up against a team who's been one of the best in Europe over the last couple seasons. I anticipate that we're going to see something similar to what we saw against Arsenal. You did get 90 from Lautaro, Mkhitaryan, Çalhanoğlu, Barella, Dumfries, De Vrij. So, you know, you've had several players that just played against Parma that gave you 90. I'm expecting massive rotation. Do you think that that's going to be the right way to go? Is that what you expect as well?
Yeah, both things. I think it's going to be the right way to go. I think it's what I expect. I would actually like to see this be the first game that we do see Jose Martinez play, personally. Let's throw him out there. I mean, we did it with Onana, right? I'm not saying that he's at the same level of Onana, but it's... I think it's a good opportunity to see what you have. You know, a lot of people think that Inzaghi doesn't trust Jose Martinez because he hasn't played yet. You have Jan Sommer. Like, I don't know. And the Lazio game is going to be more important, especially with the form that they're in, the way that they've been scoring goals, and the way that they've been really surprising all of Serie A with their performances. And Baroni, you know, I mean, right now, I would put him as a front runner for manager of the season. You know, if you really wanted to break it down. So, yeah, I think that, especially given how just competitive the league is at the top, I'd be okay doing massive, massive rotations against, you know, a team like Leverkusen. And if Xabi Alonso wants to pip us for like a 1-0 win or whatever, or even a draw, I'm fine with it. I mean, with the way that we've been playing all season, especially in the Champions League, it's not that I don't care. It's that I still put a level of importance on the Serie A, and with it being such a long season and right now none of our rivals are dropping points, you have to make that a priority, unfortunately.
Big game today. I think it's today against for Napoli Lazio. Big game.
Forza Lazio.
Rooting hard for Lazio there. And then that, of course, both of those games are away games. Traveling to Germany, traveling to Rome. It's going to be interesting. Very, very difficult fixtures, but obviously, you know, this side has been navigating difficult fixtures for a long time and finding a way to make it happen. All right. Anything else that you wanted to touch on before we head out of here?
Yeah. One quick thing is, I know it doesn't have to do with Inter. However, the Las Vegas Lights started selling these reverse brand hats. We got 95 left in the store. I think they're pretty sick. I kind of wish Inter would do something like this, but 95 hats left. Only ones that are going to be made. This is literally like a one-time production. Get your hands on it. Support a smaller club. Who cares?
Support Johnny.
Sick design.
The president of
Support
Inter
me.
Twitter.
Help me keep my job. That'd be nice.
The president of Inter Twitter.
But yeah, and we're gonna be doing some more giveaways here soon. I am keeping track of all the people on Spotify who have us as number one on their Spotify Wrapped.
Thank you so much, guys.
I mean, the fact that there's 120 of you that have us as your number one, I know it's not like a crazy number, but still, like 100, there's a lot of podcasts you could choose from. So for us to be number one on your list, that's sick. For the people who have Apple Podcasts, myself included, I will be including you guys in this this as well. I don't want you to feel left out or not able to win, you know, the Hakan card. And yeah, I'm going to be doing some other card giveaways and maybe I might try to get my hands on a Las Vegas Lights signed jersey for people. That might be something I'll throw in as a giveaway. I know it's not Inter, but I don't know.
We're football fans.
Yeah, like if you're a football fan, you should love it no matter what level it is. That's my personal take. And now that we have the dates too for the Club World Cup, I mean, let's really try to organize something at least for one of them, the games. You know, I would for sure think that LA would probably be a better opportunity for people to get together. I know we have some Interisti who are in California.
I've never been to Seattle. I'm interested in.
I've never been to Seattle either. I'm definitely going to one game in Seattle. I'm going to go to two group games just because I would like to. You know, definitely the LA one because it's a short drive, and I would like to go to one game in Seattle. Yeah,
let's start talking. It's going to come up on us soon. These the ticket sales and so forth. So let's start talking, you guys.
Yep.
Let us know. We'll try to set something up. All right. I think we're good to go. In the words of the great Roberto Scarpini, Forza ragazzi, Forza ragazzi, Forza ragazzi.